From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. This week marks the second anniversary of one of the most spectacular corporate bankruptcies in history. A little-known company named Enron grew quickly in the 1990s into a powerful player in the energy industry. When it collapsed, thousands lost their jobs, and a corporation once valued at $80 billion was destroyed. Yet Enron's top officers walked away with hundreds of millions of dollars. They sold their Enron stock before news of the company's problems got out. But after 2 years, those top officers haven't been indicted, and there are questions as to whether they ever will be. NPR's Wade Goodwin has the story.
For reporters covering the Enron collapse, trying to discern the precise direction of the government's criminal investigation has been like trying to read tea leaves in the bottom of a cup. A big part of that is the sheer scope of the investigation, 100 million pieces of paper and dozens of potential wrongdoers. It leaves a lot of options for prosecutors.
It takes an enormous amount of time to put together a case of this complexity and magnitude.
Chris Bebel is a former SEC enforcement lawyer and Justice Department prosecutor whose specialty is securities fraud. Bebel is taking issue with a recent theory that's been circulating that because it's been 2 years with no indictment of Enron's former top executives, Jeff Skilling and Ken Lay, there probably won't be an indictment. Bebel says that's nonsense.
The government attorneys are head and shoulders above where they were a year ago. They're moving along at a slow but steady pace.
If you're a federal prosecutor trying to build a criminal case against Ken Lay, a pivotal moment occurs 4 months before Enron goes under. Remember the whistleblower Enron executive Sharon Watkins? In August of 2001, Watkins wrote Lay a letter in which she detailed her concerns that Enron was about to implode in a wave of accounting scandals. A week later, she met with Lay in person and pleaded with him to investigate her concerns. Bebel says it is what Lay did and said after this that exposes him legally.
After meeting with Sharon Watkins and being told that conceivably the company could drown in a sea of accounting scandals, he makes a series of statements to company employees which were unduly optimistic and highly favorable with respect to the business prospects of the company. He predicts great things to come.
It is what Lay failed to mention that could cause him potential problems. Bebel says that because of Sharon Watkins, Lay was in possession of critical inside information about Enron's true financial situation, information about financial schemes that cast serious doubt about the company's future. Information, Bebel says, Lay was obligated to disclose.
The problem is that those statements constitute half-truths. They're deceptive and misleading. He didn't add the caveat that although he had been buying stock, he had also been selling stock. He didn't make any mention of all the bad news he had received from Sharon Watkins.
Well, a CEO is not obliged to report everything that comes across his desk.
Michael Ramsey is Ken Lay's lawyer.
I mean, things like that happen to a fellow in his seat. People come to him with all kinds of complaints, from people stealing paper clips to major fraud. When such a thing comes onto his screen and it is credible, as the Watkins thing was credible, it's his duty to refer it for investigation, which is what he did.
Ramsey argues that when it comes to Lay's emails and the other optimistic statements he made after Watkins' warning, Lay is not guilty of securities fraud because the chairman believed every word he was saying. Ramsey says the fact that Enron fell apart soon thereafter does not change that.
Yeah, there turned out to be enormous trouble in the Enron so far as some of the financial structures that were within the company are concerned. If Ken Lay had said things about the company or about those financial structures, knowing that they were false, he would have a problem. He did not. He did not make a knowing false statement. Now, I don't know how to put it any stronger than that. I'm saying it again. He did not make a knowing false statement of any sort.
Ramsey's contention goes to the heart of Lay's defense, that he was a glad-handing rainmaker who schmoozed with politicians and other corporate executives as an Enron figurehead. While it might be a little humiliating, Lay's best defense is that he really did not know what was going on inside his company. Former Enron CEO Jeff Skilling will have a more difficult time making that case because Skilling had a reputation as a hands-on executive. Nevertheless, Skilling's lawyer, Bruce Heiler, is intent on moving his client as far as possible from the Enron mess.
From day one on this matter, as things broke in the press and with Congress, people tended to designate my client as some sort of a super employee who was there supposedly to do, to see, to check, to monitor, to negotiate, and to sign off on everything as though he were an expert in all fields.
There have been indictments of Enron executives all around Skilling and Lay. 26 people have been charged. And while that is a sure sign of the government's progress, ironically, it also presents a real problem for prosecutors. For you see, the more lawyers and accountants who knew of and signed off on these alleged schemes, the better it is legally for Lay and Skilling. Hiller says this is a good defense for his client.
There were hundreds of people at Enron that were hired to monitor transactions, negotiate them, cross-check them, and so forth. And, you know, any CEO or COO in America has to be able to rely on that.
But this defense can fall short if the government can get the right guy to cooperate with them. The right guy is someone very high up on the company ladder, someone close to Skilling and Lay, someone in a position to say, it was a scheme from the beginning, I knew about it, we all knew about it. Federal prosecutors hope David Delaney is that man. On October 30th, Delaney, a former chief executive officer of Enron North America and Enron Energy Services, pleaded guilty to insider trading and agreed to cooperate with federal prosecutors. Delaney was considered an heir apparent to Lay and Skilling. In Delaney's indictment and the Securities and Exchange Commission's complaint, prosecutors charged there was an overarching scheme which extended back to 1998. The purpose? To manipulate Enron's finances to meet Enron's profit goals. The indictment alleges that while Delaney participated in parts of the deception, he had knowledge of the scheme's entire scope. But even if Delaney takes the stand and testifies that there was a grand conspiracy, Heiler believes he'll be able to keep Skilling out of it.
In terms of my client, we just feel comfortable the facts would show he would not be involved in any of that. Those transactions involved highly subjective judgments and involved business judgments for business people to be making, and are the types of transactions that, in my experience, would normally be vetted by a lot of different experts, whether they be financial, accounting, or legal, both inside and outside of a company.
But whether this safety in numbers defense would win the day in court is, for now, simply a matter of legal conjecture. A spokesman for the Justice Department declined to comment for this story, but sources close to the investigation indicated that although it was still too early to tell, prosecutors might not be able to gather enough evidence to seek an indictment against Chairman Kenneth Lay. More confidence, however, was expressed about a potential indictment of CEO Jeff Skilling. Wade Goodwin, NPR News.